Oh, shit. I burnt my eyebrows off.
Hello, everybody. This is one half of the Valiant 33 podcast. Stu is not here today, so I'm going at this solo. This is just a cold open. There's going to be no music or anything because, frankly, it just doesn't feel right to put music in front of this without Stu, who is putting things in the boxes because that's just what he told me he was doing. So he's busy. Last episode we talked about some things. I'll be honest with you, I don't remember what we talked about last episode, and that's not because I was like fucked up or anything. I just, as soon as we're done with the podcast, I just forget about it. I think it was some actor who said he's never watched a movie he's ever been in. And that's basically the philosophy I like to take, is I just talk into the microphone and then I forget about it. You know, if things creep up from what I say, then I just deal with it. But most of the time I just answer, you know what, I don't know what I said, but sorry, or you're welcome. So I'm sitting here in this room and it's kind of dawning on me how absolutely insane what I'm doing is, which is just talking into a microphone by myself. And if anybody looked through the window right now, they'd probably think I was recording a manifesto before throwing on a leather jacket and shooting up a movie theater. And it's kind of funny how it's a thin line between doing something, being a crazy person, and just doing a podcast, really. Like, if Stu was here doing the podcast with me and somebody looked in, they'd be like, oh, they're just talking about some shit nobody really cares about. But when it's just me, it's dangerous. Anyways, I'll let you in on a little secret. Normally we have like bullet points of things we're going to talk about. Today I don't have that. Stu does all that work. I'm flying solo right now. I got, can't keep going out. I got this. I got my energy drink. I got my Ruby Red Kolsch. So I got a nice little cocktail going on here. And we're going to see what happens. So, soccer, RNYFC, their social media has kicked off a little bit from what I've noticed. It went from pretty much dead from, well, I want to say, 2017. It was silent for about 3 years and they came back out, boom, Vardy news, yada, yada, yada. And then they still weren't doing that much, but then they must have hired somebody because they've been putting out tweets right, left, right, and center. All sorts of stuff, even tweets we probably weren't supposed to see because they get deleted. But at least they're doing something, which is good. I guess it's an important part of branding, even though I hate that word. I hate when the word branding and brand and product is used. But I know this is a business and you got to make money, but it's just, it feels so dirty to use those words. I guess getting on social media and doing this stuff is part of a brand, and it's how you get people interested in your product. I don't know. It's just part of the process. I would like to think that American soccer can be in a way where you don't need to sell it that way, but we're not there yet. It's not really a community institution. And you could see trends in these, what do you call it? See trends in these branding trends where, god damn it, this thing keeps fucking going out. This is gonna be a problem the whole time. It's because it's too loose. Like, there was a trend for a while where teams are doing a lot of like vaporwave glitch stuff, and a lot of teams still do it, but I guess, I can't really talk because I did the video game thing. And there's a bunch of teams that were doing video game schedule releases and in like 8-bit art. I don't know. Everything goes through cycles and waves. It's easy to go with the safe option, which is, this has worked for somebody else, so let's just do this too. And it takes some balls to try something new. And I'm not saying that they don't have balls or they do have balls. They're just doing social media, which is what you have to do nowadays So, you know what? For better or for worse, it's better now because before they weren't doing shit. So I'm happy with it. And I'm not going to dog on them for really anything. I mean, because I have a theory that this season wasn't even supposed to happen. And I'm not the only one who thinks that. I think if all things were how they were before, this whole project really wouldn't have happened until 2023. The reason that it's happening now is because another team came out and said that they're playing in 2022. So now all these things are kind of being tossed in the pot and they're just trying to make it work for 2022. And they're doing a pretty damn good job. I mean, I'm looking at this roster and it looks pretty good. I mean, I got this Total Football Analysis website up because I guess I'm supposed to talk about it. Who's it written by? Mario Hucios Jr. He did like this whole write-up. I'm sure you've seen it. If you follow the team, you've seen it. They've retweeted it. I've retweeted it. It goes into like a little bit of a history, a very brief history. It shows the squad, the coach. It basically names all the people. And it says that it has like an age graph where it shows, you know, ages, youngest to oldest. The youngest is Raymond Dre at 18. And it goes up, all the way to Ed Williams, who's 26, as the oldest player. So it says our average age is about 1 year older than the rest of the league. And that's impressive that he put that together, but it's just adding numbers and dividing it by, what is it, 14 people? But, you know, it's more work than I did. Ed Williams being 26, still pretty young. I mean, he's not walking around with a cane. I guess the only old man thing he does is he plays golf every day. If you follow his Instagram, he plays golf every day. He should be coming here soon, though. I just got a text that Bruno is on his way here tonight. So maybe he was just waiting for that. Which, you know, somebody else said to me, you can't really blame him for staying in England when our head coach isn't even here yet. So he does have a point. But now he's got no excuse. Because Bruno's doing the samba at the airport tonight. Oh, shit. Alright, let me get some of this Kolsch in me. Which reminds me, we've completely ignored our sponsor the past couple episodes. We still do have one. It's Toasted Bear Tavern, as I'm trying to put out this cherry from burning the Tupperware container. They sponsored us. They're not open right now, but they're opening up a new place at 989 South Clinton Avenue, whenever it opens, maybe like a month or two. So yeah, go on down there and check them out when they're open. We're going to do watch parties and stuff there for away games. And that's just us. You know, a bunch of fans got together and we were doing meetings over there before. We were like, yeah, fuck it, this place is cool. They let us do pretty much whatever we want. So we picked it. It's not like the club said this is where all the fans have to go because they struck up some kind of deal or something because it was on brand or it was part of the product. And I guess, I don't know how I would even, going back to that whole social media and branding thing, I don't know how I would even classify their style. I mean, you could say, like, yeah, the colors are green and black and gray. And, you know, I know what font they use. It's the Bebes Nu font, which is actually what Netflix uses, which, you know, I don't think that's on purpose. It's just a nice, slick font. Even though they are doing that show, maybe it is on Netflix, and they're like, you know what, let's just use that font. But I doubt it. So, yeah, I think it's very... It doesn't stand out. It doesn't have like a unique character to it, which is fine with me. I'm of the opinion that club social media accounts, admins, whatever the fuck you want to call it, their main job is just to put information out. Like I don't necessarily need you to have personality. Just get the information out that needs to get out. Let the fans have personality and fill that gap, I guess. When clubs are doing like too many emojis in their posts, I think that's what sets me off. Like emojis are fine. I use emojis probably when I shouldn't. But like, I don't need to be seeing tweets with emojis in it. Like, just tell me, like, all right, so they've been doing posts like, what kind of beer do you want at the games? And you know, like, they're probably getting some information from that, but I don't think they're really sitting down with a list going, uh-huh, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, we should do this and then that. It's more of just getting their name out there. And this is totally coming off like I'm just dogging them, but I'm not. Like, I just have to fill time. So this is what I'm talking about. If they're going to go that route and have like, try and have a strong internet presence, pick something very specific and go with it. Like, don't be afraid to be a little different. Like, I guess, I hope this doesn't get me in trouble, but the thing that I've been kind of just found out about on the internet the other day, and I'm really into, is this, dark MAGA thing, where I guess it's just like, I can't tell if it's for real or if it's tongue in cheek, but it's like a bunch of Trump supporters who are doing this kind of weird 80s black leather synth wave, like art style, where it's like kind of cultish, but also like very like lip gloss pop in a way, but slightly emo, if that makes any sense. And just as an art style, I think it's fascinating and I love looking at what people are making. You know, I didn't vote for Trump, and I don't plan on voting for Trump, but it's just like, as an art style, I think it's great because it's a little bit different and you're not used to seeing something like that. And I'm not suggesting that they go and rip off Dark MAGA and start doing that, but if they did, I mean, whatever, it would certainly be unique in the soccer world. This family's walking by with their baby and the windows open, and they definitely think I'm going to go shoot something up because I'm over here talking to myself, talking about Dark MAGA. Let me wait for them to leave. So my neighborhood's a little different. Growing up, it was an old Italian neighborhood over on the west side. And then over the past 10 years, all the original people that moved in started dying because they're old. And so it's like a new younger wave of people like me coming in and buying the houses. And it went, and there's still like an old guard of like those old Italians that are sprinkled throughout. And you can tell who they are because whenever anything happens outside, they're just in the window watching. And I'm becoming one of them because I'm looking out the window watching them watch everybody else. So maybe this is the perfect neighborhood for me. I'm going to keep that tradition going. So what was I talking about? Oh, yeah, I was talking about social media. And then I also kind of was talking about this article. I should probably get back to that. He does a good job of splitting up by nationality the players that, and of course this is all old now because we just signed some new players, but I'll get to them. It's mostly from the US, colleges in the US, three from Brazil, and then Belgium, Canada, Cape Verde, England, Portugal. And then he does the origin, like what leagues they come from. He says that it's kind of hard to tell like there's a hot spot or not. But with the latest signings, I would say Finland, the second and third division in Finland, is definitely becoming a hotspot. The other thing that's cool that he does is he has a lot of heat maps for the players, which I love a good heat map because I thought I was a stats person. And then I read this article where he has, like, hold on, let me zoom in real quick so I can see. So he's got like, I don't even know what that stands for. Capital PADJ, Pennsylvania DJ interceptions. And all these numbers for Kaiki. And like, I don't care what that number is. I'm never going to care what that number is. But you put a heat map with some colors on it, I'm all over that. I can look at Who's a good one? Batista, Lamar Batista. His heat map, he's all over, up and down that left side. But as far as numbers go, like, I'm just trying to find something I can understand. Like, what is PADJ? You know what? I got the internet in front of me. I'm going to look it up. PADJ interceptions. You are looking at how the sausage is made right now. Possession adjusted stats. I still have no fucking idea. You know what? I don't care. I got the heat map. I'm good. So, yeah, I mean, check this article out. I'm not going to go through it any more than what I've done. But, yeah, check that out. Because I don't want to just hijack this guy's work, because he put in some work to it. So, yeah, it's totalfootballanalysis.com. And then just also put in RNYFC and you'll probably find it. So the new players that they signed, I guess the big take. Oh, I didn't know I left that one up. All right. Let me pull their names up. There's so many players now where, like, I actually have to double check. Because before, when it was only like 14, I could just name them off. Sound like the biggest fan in the world. Now I gotta pull these names up. All right. So after this article, they did Pedro Dolabella, who is a midfielder. They just say midfielder or box-to-box midfielder, but when I was watching his videos, that motherfucker's up in the box trying to score. So I guess you could call him, I don't know. I don't know what you would call him. He's a midfielder, and he likes to shoot. The other guy they signed was Gibran Rayo, who... I think it's another midfielder. We got a lot. It's good, though, because we needed those. He came from Texas, FC Dallas. And I know this is riveting analysis here. Ian Garrett came out today. He's a left winger from Finland. And he's good, too. So I think you can all realize now who does the majority of the analysis work. Between me and Stu, I'm more of not this. What I will say, though, is when they were talking about they wanted to have a very attacking team, they're definitely following through on that, because we have a lot of wingers, a lot of attacking players, a lot of mids, but we only have two center backs and two fullbacks. Which is starting to be a little concerning. But I know they're probably going to bring in more. We get 34 spots. 24 of them have to be on pro contracts. The other 10 can be amateur. I'm sure there's a bunch of kids in Empire who could fill a role if they needed them to. But in their scrimmage against St. Bonaventure, they put up a starting 11, and there was one person in there that I didn't recognize. So I know they're looking at somebody, and I'm assuming that it's a center back, because they had Batista in there, and then you had Wood and Vaneker, and you don't play back three with two fullbacks and a center back. So I'm assuming that kid was also a center back. I don't know his name. I've asked around. Nobody knows. So we'll find out. So I'm expecting a center back to be coming out shortly. So I guess other than social media, what have they've talked about tickets. This is turning into a hot button issue, because originally the date they gave was February 28th, which is my mom's birthday. Happy birthday, Mom. The next date they gave was March 7th, and it is currently March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, and we still don't know anything about tickets publicly. They did say that they need to make a manifest. So there could be some kind of hold up with that as far as drawing the individual little seats and making it all work from a computer standpoint. I get that. It's just, there's a lot of people asking, how do I give you my money so I can watch this team? And there just hasn't been a response. So I guess going back to the social media thing, just make a post saying, like, listen, we hit a snag. No biggie. we got you. We'll put tickets in your hands pretty dang soon. And then people would stop asking, probably. I mean, you might get a couple who will be like, like every day, do it. But for the most part, people would be like, all right, they're acknowledging, you know, that there's a delay. Because right now, people probably just think, like, did I give the wrong email in the newsletter? Or did I get blacklisted? Or, like, what's going on? It's just nobody knows. It's, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a panic, but people just are going to lose interest eventually if you just keep. It's like when you text in a girl and then she stops answering you or starts giving you one word answers, eventually you just kind of give up and you move on to a new girl. So I guess just send like a kiss face emoji in the form of a little note saying like, we're still thinking about you. I'm just real busy, babe. Like, and then, you know, you can interpret what busy means. You know, you could assume that she's sneaking around behind your back. Or you could be like, no, she's preparing something very nice for me, and it's just taking time. Just sending that message, the little kissy face emoji in the form of, yeah, we hit a little snag with the tickets, but it's no big deal. We had to push it back a week. Everyone will be, you know what, fine. We're still here for you because you told us what's going on. And if you don't know anything about Rochester, is we live in a climate, I think it was Socrates who said that you could tell a lot about a person or a group of people based on the climate that they live in. So he was saying that people from the Mediterranean or around the equator are typically, this is like borderline weird eugenic stuff, but he was old and Greek, so nobody gives him stick for it. But he was saying people that live around the equator are usually shorter and fatter and lazier, and they're more temperamental. Or is temperamental the right word? They're more temperate-minded, where they don't fly off the handle as much, which we know, you know, that's not really true. But he said people in the north, like who lives up by the Arctic, or like Finland, Norway, those countries, that they're very prone to violence and very stern people and have bad senses of humor, which is also not true. But he was saying that people who live in climates where there's four seasons, in our case, we have five seasons. And if you don't know what the fifth one is, you'll find out. He says that those are the best types of people because it's a mix of the two. I disagree with him. I think people who live in maybe it's that extra fifth season that puts us over the edge, but we are not even-tempered people. We like to overreact, clearly. I mean, look at, I don't even want to get into the crime rates and the murder rates around here, but that has something to do with it. It's because people in general in Rochester don't really know how to act. And I'm not just talking about the city. I'm talking about the suburbs too. And maybe even some of the counties surrounding this whole area of New York. We don't know how to act sometimes by pulling away and not saying that your favorite soccer team is selling tickets soon. I'm not saying anyone's going to go out and kill somebody, but there will be swings of emotion to where you're going to get people, you know, who might sound like they're mad about something, probably like me, even though it might sound like a passive aggressive anger, but I'm not mad. And then when you come out, people are going to be all happy again. So it's really very easy to sway the public opinion on this, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at. this is going real great. I will tell you, it does feel like the start of summer. As soon as I drink this Ruby Red Kolsch, that marks summer for me now. It doesn't hurt that today was like 70 degrees and I was driving up and down the lake, in Canandaigua. It's very hard to get drunk on this beer. It's actually the perfect summer beer because nothing's worse than getting absolutely hammered in the summer and you're just sweating constantly. I would rather get drunk in the winter, believe it or not. So the other thing I want to bring up about people around in Rochester. This is a somewhat of a segue. I know that the club is interested in doing community outreach stuff. Specifically, I know Lee Tucker has a degree in. I should know what the actual degree is in, but I don't. It's in community stuff. He has a PhD in community stuff. So I know a big part of what they want to do is do community outreach and get involved with the community. They do things that actually make an impact, which is not just like just throwing in with some charity that's already well established. Like Camp Good Days is great. And they do good stuff, but like they're fine with or without the Rhinos doing anything with them. They'll be just fine. There's definitely smaller. It's just like Lollipop Farm. Now I'm just stealing Stu's ideas. They're just like Lollipop Farm. Like that's the biggest animal shelter around, and you get people driving from all over to get these animals because they're considered the best pound animals. And I wouldn't even call them a pound. They're an animal shelter. Animals who need home house. If you want the pound, you got to go downtown to where they got like pit bulls with one eye and shit like that. Those are the places that need help with things. I'll tell you a little bit. My dog is a pit bull. He's got both his eyes, but I got him from a pound in Buffalo, where when I said that I wanted him, the lady at the desk looked relieved because they were about to put him down. And I guess they're not allowed to tell people because it like kind of pressures them into picking dogs that they probably might not normally want. If people find out that they're going to die. So she looked relieved, but those places are the ones that need help. And it goes to like, what specific community stuff do you want to get involved in? Because you can do the animal thing. Like I know places do, you bring a bunch of dogs to wherever and then people get to pet them, but I don't think a lot of people end up adopting those animals just because they're at the field. They just go, oh, look, it's a dog, and they touch it and then get the dog's hopes up, and then you know it's another heartbreak for them. Or maybe I'm wrong, maybe I don't know any of what I'm talking about. I think, you know, if you want to do like okay, so February was Black History Month, and everybody likes to make posts about Black History Month. Only during February, though. It gets weird, because it's just like the gay pride thing. Like, it's only 1 month, and then everybody just moves on, and it's just, it becomes a gimmick. I'm sure the people who benefit from that, whatever it is, like whether there's foundations or whatever, and they get a flood of money coming in or help or whatever, they love it. But they also know like this doesn't happen year round, it's just during these times, which is fine, but it comes off sometimes like you're just tooling these things because it's what you're supposed to do. Like, especially just to make this about soccer, to give it some type of scale, like the logos, like during June, I think it is, everyone does the rainbow logo and then they leave it up for June. And if you don't do it, then you're just a bigot because you didn't put a rainbow on your logo. And then it forces other people to do it too, whether they want to or not, because there's that social pressure. And then with Black History Month during February, if you don't post about Black History Month, then you're racist because we're doing it and they're doing it. And like, what? You don't think this should be happening? You don't like it? Why don't you go put on a white sheet and go burn some stuff, racist? Like that's the same thing. It puts a lot of pressure. And doing those things is fine, but when you're only doing it because other people are pressuring you to do it, it cheapens it. It doesn't hit the same, as the kids say. So I guess the point of this is, if you do any community outreach, and I am slightly involved with it, we're working on some stuff, but it has to be from, a place of righteousness. Because if you do it as just a marketing thing, then it takes away the whole point of it. And that's tricky, because you could say, you know what, we're just going to do what we do And whoever is involved on the other end, if they want to promote it, they can promote it. But, you know, us getting the clout for it isn't important. That's cool. But then you also got to think, like, do people want help? That's the thing. Like, so say, like, during February, it was, let's, you know, promote all these black businesses or black-owned businesses around town. Cool. Did you ask them? And I'm not saying that, you know, the Rhinos did this. I'm just saying I've seen other teams do it. Did you ask them? Maybe they don't want a white-owned club. That sounds terrible. But, you know, a club that's owned by a white person, basically using your black-owned business to show everybody how tolerant they are. Like, if you did ask them and they're down with it, that's awesome. But if not, and I feel like a lot of these places aren't, like, officially asked, then that becomes kind of a problem. Because it's just, and I'm going to say this from the best perspective I know, or the only perspective I know, which is as a white guy. But I can sense that there would be some frustration in that, because it's not debatable that if you are a black person in what is considered a white space, you have to prove yourself twice as hard to be considered at the same level as someone who's white and average doing the same thing. And you could say the same thing about the opposite. You could say that if it's a predominantly black space and you're a white person in there, you also have to work twice as hard to be considered good. But I'm not even talking about that. What I'm talking about is if you are black and you've built something up for yourself and for people like you, you should be able to have a say on who gets to ride the coattails of that, I guess. Because you've built that in a system which is basically not necessarily set up for that to even happen. And then when it does happen, you have all these white hands coming in trying to take a piece. I get, and I'm not trying to point fingers at anybody. It sounds like I'm, like, targeting this at somebody, and I'm not. I'm just really trying to get to an hour here. I would like to see soccer teams doing more low-key stuff. And it just goes back to everybody doing the same shit over and over and over again. Like, I feel like you could take any account, any social media account from any team, and you could just swap the logos and nobody's going to know the difference, because everybody's just got the same playbook. You can say the same thing about support groups around the country. I know I've gotten into that before. Everybody does the same shit. It's almost like there's some secret book floating around. It's not secret. It's just what, you know, what fucking people in Europe do. But everybody feels like, you know, this is what you got to do. There's just a very glaring lack of originality in American soccer, pretty much on all fronts, unless you consider having a closed system with MLS and every level the unique thing. It's just nobody's doing anything differently. People are just kind of going after the thing that they see on TV, which is, you know, crowds of 30,000 people, you know, all singing, and everybody's obsessed about soccer, football, whatever you want to call it. That's their thing. And people here want to be a part of that because that's also their thing. But it's a niche thing over here. It's not the main thing. It's growing. There's definitely, you know, larger amounts of people who care about it. Like the other day, someone said, I want to get back into soccer, which means that they used to play when they were younger and then didn't give a fuck about it. And then now everybody's kind of talking about it, so they want to get back into it. I told them, you know what? You could watch Premier League. You could watch Serie A. You could pretty much, you could watch any league you want. I watched the fucking Indian League, for God's sakes. You could watch, you know, anything on TV and probably get back into it. You know, and the best way to do it is come out to a season starting soon for the Rhinos, come out to a live game He goes, yeah, but that's the rhinos. So, and he said it in a way like, yeah, but I'm trying to get back into soccer. I'm not trying to go watch the rhinos. And that's a very old guard type of response from people around here. If you say, who's your team? And someone goes, the rhinos. They'll go, yeah, okay. But like, who's your team? That's the shit that needs to change. Man U, or Man City, or Liverpool, or Arsenal, that should not be the first fucking name that comes out of your mouth when you say, when someone asks you, who's your team? It should be the rhinos. And then from there goes, all right, so what European teams do you follow? And then you say Liverpool and Arsenal and Roma and all that stuff. That's not happening. I don't know if it'll ever happen, if I'm being completely honest with you, with all y'all. It's because it's grown so much in this country based off of TV deals, especially NBC. So if you know what, if you want to blame anybody, blame NBC buying the Premier League rights. Because there's plenty of people who have now, like, I don't want to call American soccer, you know, Kraft macaroni, but compared to the amount of people that like the Premier League and watch the Premier League and like are obsessed about it and get tattoos of the teams, you know, of teams they've never seen play live, but you know, they pack the bars every weekend to watch this team. That's grandma's baked mac and cheese with the breadcrumbs on top and then a little bit of bacon grease on top just to make it real crisp. That's what they consider the Premier League. And then anything American is just the box macaroni and cheese. And you can't, it's very hard to change that. Like, yeah, you know what? Sometimes I'm in the mood for just the boxed mac or the Kraft mac and cheese. Sometimes I want that. And I want it real soupy so I can like basically put it in a cup and drink it. But most of the time, I'm going to want that good baked mac and cheese. So it's very hard to switch that perception of it now because it's gone too far. It's gone so far to the point where people are actively going out of their way to not support whatever local team they have because there's something going on TV. Which is very depressing to me because I'll always say that I'll go watch a Division 4 UPSL team live over the Champions League final on TV any day. Not even 9 times out of 10. 10 times out of 10, I will go to the live game. I might draw the line at like if it's like a U15 game because I have no business being there. But if we're talking adult... amateur, like in a league that's established, I will choose that over anything on TV any day. World Cup final, sorry, can't go. UPSL team's playing. So basically, that's my whole mindset on it, which is slightly dystopian in a way. Maybe I'm just seeing it from the frame and lens of Rochester soccer, which is incredibly broken. It's broken to the point where I don't think it'll ever get put back together. But what we're doing with this podcast and what a lot of the fans are doing is just trying to make our piece of it as worthwhile as possible. And it's not about taking on, you know, pretty much anything I've said, which is, yeah, we're going to overtake the Premier League and we're going to be more popular in Rochester with the Rhinos and the Premier League. It's not going to happen. We're going to, you know, fix racism and social injustice and get all these dogs homes from the pound. That's not going to happen either. But we're going to try and do a little bit of each of those things. And for those who do buy in, it's going to be worthwhile for you. If you don't want to buy in, you know what? I'm not here to twist your arm about it anymore. I've been that person. I've tried to force people to care. And I don't have the energy to do it anymore. And a lot of people, you just hit a point where you're just like, you know what? Like it or don't. Listen to this podcast or don't. And if you do, thank you for listening. I'm not sure how many more of you are going to listen after this, but I do appreciate it. Maybe I should switch it up and hit a little bit of this caffeine. All right. Well, that's been most of an hour. I don't really have that much else to talk about. Follow our Instagram. We've been putting out a lot. And the reason we've been doing pictures of the players instead of the little videos is just because there's so many players coming out now that me and Stu just don't have time to make videos anymore. So, I'm kind of ready for the players to stop being announced because it's becoming a lot of work. But I love seeing these players come in because we need them. not like we need them. Like, we need, thank God you're here. I mean, thank God you're here, but not thank God you're here. I would like to have a full roster. There's not that much time before the season starts. So I'm not expecting a lot of these new players to come in and just pick up and go. Maybe they do. Maybe they're good enough. Maybe Bruno's got a system where he could just plug and play some people and we'll do well. We'll find out. It's coming up soon. And by soon, I mean a week. St. Louis is March 25th. We're going out there. We're going to see him live. Been waiting 4 years for this. But now it's down to, you know, almost 4 days, which is crazy. I'm more nervous than I am excited. I am excited, but I'm definitely very nervous because over the past 4 years, we've gone through, at the start, it was, oh, we'll be back. It's just a short-term thing, to a very quick drop of, oh, shit, we might be fucking gone. And then just hearing little rumors here and there, like, oh, maybe we're coming back. Oh, no, fuck, we're gone. Oh, maybe we're coming back. No, we're definitely gone. Oh, shit, we're coming back. We're coming back. We're coming back. Boom. So it was a lot of peaks and valleys. And then I guess just seeing them making it real, where, like, we could talk about all this shit, all this, these fucking heat maps that I was talking about, all these names, these goofy pictures and stuff. But until they're on the field and they're playing, it's PTSD. We had this team for 22 years and then it got snatched away. Just seeing them out on the field, I think, will be, I don't know how it'll feel, to be honest with you. I think that's where the nervousness comes from, which is, I don't know how I'm going to react. I doubt that I'm going to burst into hysterical tears. I won't write it off though, but I don't think that's going to happen. I don't know. It's going to be good. Even if they lose, I still think it's going to be good. Even if they have a shitty season, it's still going to be good. Because before we had nothing. And now we have them. I don't want to go down the huge long path of, you know what, they shouldn't have changed the name. I'll be honest with you. In I was on those Zoom calls, the fan meetings, and I said, don't take the Rhinos out of it. I was banging on the table and shit. There's video of it somewhere. I said, don't do it. But they did it. And you know what? I don't care. It's they're back, which is great. But I feel like they kind of box themselves in a little bit, where they have to do well year one because they're not at the old stadium. Which I'm not even going to touch that anymore. We've talked about that way too goddamn much. They changed the logo. That's 50-50 if you want to be generous on people liking it and hating it. You're basically in a situation now where you have to do... you have to do well. Because if you make all these changes... they put big chips down on the table. And they've said it before. The Dworkins have said it. We have one shot at this. And they're right. They do have one shot. So it is a gamble to go all in on changing things up the way that they have and hoping that it becomes successful. And the opposite side of that was change nothing and just add Vardy and see what happens. Both are risky, to a certain degree. They just chose the one on the right instead of the one on the left. And the one on the right was new badge, new stadium, pretty much new everything, and let's see if it works. The thing that makes that work, in my opinion, is winning. If they do well, all the problems with the choice that they made goes away because it worked. The proof is in the pudding, as they say. If they don't do well, you'll still have hardcore fans that go to the game, like me and everybody I know. We'll still go to the games. But that's just one section. There's casual soccer fans who are being pulled by their shirt in four different directions around town. I have less faith in them of sticking with any team. It's not even just this one. You could say that about any team around town that has casual fans. Once that team starts doing poorly, they're going to look around. They're going to look around for the hot girl. So, you know, that's probably a lot of where the nervousness comes from, too, is I know the tip. It's not a big group of fans in town that like soccer. It's a big group, but not to be spread that thin. If there was only one team in town, you know, then that's why you get what happened in the late 90s and the early 2000s with 10,000 people at the game. I wouldn't even go as far and say that all 10,000 of those people were soccer fans. I don't think they were. They were just vibe hoes, if that's, you know, a thing. They just knew that this was a wave to ride and they wanted to be on it. That could happen again. That happens with anything. Soccer specifically, I think we could get 5,000 or 6,000 people who actually like soccer into a stadium around here. Yeah, I think we could. 5,000 or 6,000. Any more than, you know, and then once you start pulling 5,000 or 6,000, you're pretty good money-wise or recognition-wise, I guess. A 5,000 or 6,000 seat stadium would, I think, be perfect for a city like this, which, you know, is a very fickle city where when you're doing well, you'll have people, you know, you'll have fence gang around the fence trying to get in because 6,000 sold out. When you're doing bad, you'll get 1,000. It won't look as bad in a 6,000 seat stadium compared to 13,000, but the numbers will fluctuate. That's why I think doing well is important. And like I've said before, it's all I've known. Like, this team is just always winning. It's always won. So I don't think it's unreasonable to keep that high expectation. I know we've had a lot of bluster on the show where, you know, we think we're going to just walk through this league and just punch people in the face and spit on their shoes and tell them to beat it. It's not easy to win any league anymore. You don't just walk through leagues. Especially at this level, it's a dogfight. But I think we have the quality to do it. We just need time. Everybody's getting here late. It goes back to my original theory where I don't think that this season was really supposed to happen this soon. But I'm very happy that it did. So even if it's a complete wreck of a season, it's still 1 year sooner than I ever thought we were going to see the Rhinos come back. So this has been the Valiant 33 podcast. I am Mike. And this has been interesting.